The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bredick. And now, Art Bredick.
I want to go to Galatians 5 today to begin. If you'll turn over to Galatians 5. There was a National Geographic that had an interesting photograph in it. It was their fossil remains of two saber-toothed cats. And what was interesting is they had died locked in combat, that the one had actually taken those giant saber teeth and crushed right through the other's back leg bone, and thereby trapping itself. It could not shake the other one loose, and so those both cats ended up locked in combat until they died. The article in the magazine said this: the cause of death of the two cats is as clear as the causes of the extinction of their own species. A very vicious species it was. But the great vicious teeth had permanently locked into one another, and they stayed there until they shared the same fate. And it is a tremendous lesson, I believe, for you and me in Galatians 5. In verse 15 it says, but if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you're not consumed of one another. And so this happens in my experience in the Church of God, that sometimes God's people will bite one another. They'll snap at one another and so on, and sometimes we hurt each other, and generally we will recover from these things, and that's been my experience. But there are cases where people who have already been wounded get shot at again and hurt by these kinds of things. And sometimes people are a little thin-skinned. Perhaps you've experienced that kind of thing. I have, because I'm fairly insensitive, I think, and so sometimes I'll say things to people and they'll tell me later that it really hurt, and I just never even realized it. But, you know, we all make mistakes, and anybody who's been raised in a family, which we all have, you realize that. Sometimes you step on the other person's toes. Sometimes we take people that we live with for granted. Sometimes we just don't realize, and we hurt those people that we love. But it does, and it should, I think, bother us to think about that. Let's go to 2 Timothy, that we sometimes do this. And I'll make an admission to you today that I have done this, and it's been on my mind a lot. And so I want to give this message today. And the message is going to be this. All you need is two governments in the world, I'm convinced, and you'll end up going to war with human nature. All you need is just two. And each one of us is literally a government in our own selves. If you think about it. And we are part of a government that is the kingdom of God, and we are members of that kingdom, and we are a people who are at war. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 3 says this, therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. And then it says, no man that wars entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who has chosen him to be a soldier. And so the point is this, here we are in a war that's a spiritual war, and there aren't bombs going off, there aren't great flashes of light, there aren't incredible sounds of warfare going on, but yet it's just as real, the war that you and I are in. And it's going on every day, and it's very, very real. And because of that, people can get hurt. And they generally don't get hurt physically, they get hurt emotionally, they get hurt psychologically. They get hurt spiritually. And war is never pretty. And there's always suffering, and there's always tragedy. There's a phenomena that takes place in every single war, and it's one of the most difficult things, I think, to understand, one of the most difficult things to cope with in life. One of the great tragedies of war, shattering, debilitating, and it's this, the phenomena of friendly fire, and that is fratricide. Brother actually killing brother, shooting at brother. Imagine yourself in the firing line in the war, and you are facing the enemy, and you're taking heavy fire from them, and you call in backup, and you know that there's jets coming in with incredible firepower, and they're coming any minute to save you, and suddenly you turn, and there they are behind you, and those jets are now shooting, but they're shooting at you. Not the enemy. Imagine the sense of betrayal, the shock, and the hurt you'd feel. But what I'm talking about isn't just some sort of idea. It's not just a philosophy. This actually happened in Desert Storm. and everyone probably remembers, thunderbolts firing at you. Think of how you'd feel, the sense of confusion, betrayal, and the tragedy. Soon, we're going to go to war with Iraq. You can be guaranteed this is going to happen. It's going to take place. We are going to shoot our own people. We're going to hurt people that are on our side. It's not an isolated incident. This happens in every single war, this phenomena of friendly fire. A Newsweek article that I read a while back said this, "Friendly fire, it's as old as war itself. During the French and Indian War, George Washington reported 400 casualties after panicked musketeers sent repeated volleys into their own ranks. In 1863, Stonewall Jackson was killed by his own soldiers as he galloped back into Southern lines. French General Alexander Pearson claimed that his army lost more than 75,000 soldiers to its own artillery fire during World War I. Military historian Colonel Trevor Dupri says probably 10% of 962,927 American casualties in World War II were the result of fratricide, that is, friendly fire. In one horrifying incident, U.S. bombers blasted American ground troops at St. Lo in France, leaving 757 casualties. The Vietnam War saw fratricide jump to somewhere between 15% to 20% because of the close-in jungle fighting. And in one fight, in 1967, paratroopers suffered 42 dead and 45 wounded from U.S. Air Force bombs that missed their target. And the cakewalk in Grenada, the supposed cakewalk, four U.S. Navy A-7 aircraft strafed paratrooper command post, inflicting 17 American casualties. And you can go on and on. Every war that has ever existed has experienced this thing of friendly fire. It's in every single war. And what I say is this, because we're in a war, friendly fire takes place in the Church of God. And every era that has come and every era that has gone has fought their war. And in every one of those eras down through the centuries, there has been this thing called friendly fire. And we will experience it as well. Let's go to James, if you would, James 3. The thing that I want to bring out today is this. We want to be Philadelphia. That's a standard we hold dear, a one we want to attain to. And yet that church is called the Church of Brotherly Love. If there was any church that would want to minimize friendly fire in its war, it should be that church. And so for this reason, I want to talk about this today. Every one of us carries around a weapon, and we just don't realize it. We carry it around in our bodies, and it's our tongue, capable of edifying and capable of destructive havoc. James 3, verse 2 through 6. "For in many things we offend all," it says, "if any man offends not in word, the same is a perfect man and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships which, though they be so great and are driven by fierce winds, yet they're turned about with a very small helm, wherever the governor wants them to. Even so, the tongue is a little member, and it boasts great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindles. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity, and so is the tongue among our members, and it defiles the whole body, and sets on fire the course of nature, and is set on the fire of hell." Look at verse 9. He says this, "Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith we curse men, which are made after the similitude of God." Isn't it a paradox that this thing we carry around with us can bless, comfort, encourage, and it can also cut and bite and hurt and destroy? It's an amazing thing, isn't it? It just depends on what we do with it. Now, have you ever been hit by spiritual friendly fire? I think you probably have. When it does happen, it's an accident. We don't mean to do it. Sometimes things just slip out. But this is what makes it so tragic, and it's this. We don't mean to do it. It's an accident. We never intend it, and yet it happens to us. Now look, in the war rooms all around the world, they have strategic planners, and they devote incredible amounts of effort in their planning when they are going to war to try to minimize friendly fire. If we then in the Church of God are at war, shouldn't we make some plans and have a strategy for minimizing this thing called friendly fire, spiritual friendly fire? Yes. And so today I want to kind of talk about this and focus on what some of the sources of this are. What are some of the things that cause this to happen even in the Church of God? Let's go to Luke 9, if you will. Luke 9. One of the things I think is, of course, competition. We live in a world that is so competitive today. And, you know, when we're little tiny kids, we're out there measuring our muscles. We actually will put ourselves up against the wall and put marks on the wall, and we'll compare ourselves with others. And, you know, in my case, well, I grew really fast when I was real young. I was like, you know, 9 years old. I was 4'9". I was really big, and I was really strong and everything. And I took such pride in that. And then through my teenage years, everybody, you know, went higher than me. But anyway, the point is, as we become teenagers, then it sort of becomes our car and you know, some of our clothes. And later on, it becomes as adult. We compare ourselves and our jobs and our incomes and the kind of houses we have and that kind of thing. But we tend to do this. We tend to have a competition that goes on in our world, in our society. And I think it rubs onto us sometimes. And it shouldn't happen, but it does. But competition develops. It even happened with the disciples, of course. In Luke 9 and verse 46 is a case in point where it says, "Then there arose a reasoning among them which of them should be the greatest." And so we're talking about something that is not like something we have to hide or pretend doesn't exist. I mean, even the disciples did this kind of thing. And so here we are in verse 46. "And Jesus, perceiving the thought of their hearts, took a child and set him to by him, and said unto them, Whoever shall receive this child in my name receives me, and whoever shall receive me receives him that sent me. For he that is least among you, the same shall be the greatest." And then, after Christ corrects them, how long do you think it lasted? Do you think that was the end of it? No. Just before Christ's death, of course, this comes up again. Luke 22, if you will. Luke 22, in verse 24. Luke 22 and verse 24. "And it says, There was also strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. And he said unto them, The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they that exercise authority upon them are also called benefactors. But you shall not be so. He that's greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief, as he that does serve." And so Christ said he was among us as one that served. And so he gave this example of the foot washing, in which he literally showed by way of his example the kind of attitude that we are to have towards one another. And it is an attitude then of one of service towards one another. While the world may be in competition with one another, we are not. Now, we are in competition, and I'll talk about this in a moment, but it's not with one another. I remember the first time I saw this, I was actually shocked about it. I was in a congregation in a galaxy far away and long ago, and there was a really wonderful pastor there, and he was new. And when he was new, it was kind of interesting that these people in the group sort of kind of played to him. Have you ever seen that? Those that have been around a long time, where the new man comes in and everybody tries to get his attention and sort of get close to him and so on. And so they were all doing this for several months. And various positions changed and everything. But anyway, the pastor announced he was going to ordain a deacon. And all of us wondered, who would it be? Who would it be? And he read the qualification, and he talked about this man in general terms. And everybody was thinking, would it be this man or this man or this man? Turned out it was Carl. He was a 72-year-old man, and he had this beautiful white hair. But nobody knew anything about Carl. Here, Carl gets ordained as a deacon. And then he was ordained, and the pastor explained that Carl had been serving for years, serving the widows, invisibly. He didn't give sermons. He didn't give sermonettes. He wasn't visible. He was invisible. So everybody afterwards went up to shake his hand and congratulate him and everything. You knew he was the one. He was the one that should have, of all the people. And yet I remember one fellow, I went up to him afterwards. I said, "Hey, isn't that great about Carl?" He said, "I don't think so. Carl doesn't do this. He doesn't do that. He doesn't do the other thing like he did, of course." You understand the point. Here he was sowing. He was shooting at Carl. It was friendly fire. In retrospect, I think if he thought about it, he would say, oh, no, I shouldn't do that. But it happens because we have this competition. We think, well, I've done this, and we sort of compare ourselves with others and that kind of thing. And then if somebody else seems to succeed, you see, we can sometimes feel hurt. And when we feel hurt, what do you think happens? Well, that old defense mechanism kicks right in, doesn't it? And that's what he was doing. And so he felt hurt, and he was shooting back. But you understand the point is, we all get hit sometimes. And have you ever been hit by spiritual friendly fire? You know how it feels. It wounds deeply, doesn't it? See, it's different if it's someone you don't know. But when it's someone that you do know, and when it's someone you care about, and you really care about what they think of you and whether they value you, and then you get hit, then it's even more painful. And of course, if you go over to Psalm 55, let's go over there for a moment. You know, David writes about this very experience himself, and you can kind of see, I think, as you read in here, what was going on with him. You can see his anguish as it is, the sense of betrayal and the pain that he felt here. And of course, it's a prophecy about Jesus Christ too, and we'll mention that in a minute. But Psalm 55, and let's go and look at verse 12 here. He says, "It was not an enemy that reproached me. Then I could have borne it. Neither was it he that hated me that did magnify himself against me. Then I would have hid myself from him. But it was you, a man my equal, my guide, my acquaintance. And we had taken sweet counsel together and walked in the house of God in company." Think about what was going on here. You can see the anguish. And again, you can see this. This is picturing Jesus Christ. And he had to go through this. It was someone he cared about. And you have to realize he died for Judas as much as anybody else. And so he loved him. He cared about him. And yet it turned on him that way. Friendly fire. I want you to think about marriage for a moment in this context. Because I think that's where it takes place probably more than any other place in the world. Any other place in our lives. That it seems that as soon as people get married, a sort of little power struggle can kind of develop. Okay, who's going to get their way? Who matters the most? You know, whose will is more important? And so a little power struggle can take place, and sometimes we can work and come home, we have troubles at work and pressures, and we come home and we tend to snap, you know, when we get home. And I remember one case, and it was me, and I remember you know, here I am. I was kind of being kind of not very nice to Marilyn for one time. And she says, "What in the world are you doing?" I said, "Well, you know, you did such and such." She said, "I never did that. It was only a dream I had." Have you ever had a dream that's so real? You know, I didn't even have to go to work and feel the pressures. It was a dream I had, and it wasn't even real. And here I'm snapping at her. But I'll tell you the truth here. We had once a knock-down, drag-out argument. We had a fight to beat the band. But I want to tell you one thing, don't worry, she came to me crawling on her hands and knees. That's right, there she was on her hands and knees as she lifted the bedspread and said, "Art Bradick, you come out from underneath that bed and fight like a man." Just kidding. But you know, Marilyn Bradick is gone now. And you can't imagine how much I wish I could take back some of the things I said. You just can't imagine it. And but it's friendly fire. I didn't mean to do it. She didn't mean to do it. But we do it on accident. Just pressures build up and we attack. Sometimes we think we're defending ourselves. And we hurt people that we love. Let's go to Matthew 5, if you will. Matthew 5. We have to realize that people are not the enemy. Old people, young people, different races, different economic levels, different religions even, different churches. I remember when the Worldwide Church of God began to come apart. I remember going to services, and almost every single week all I heard about was what they had done again, and why were they this way, and why were they that way, and why didn't they see this, and why didn't they do what other people thought was the right thing. But you understand my point, it was just constant friendly fire. Constant barrage of attack of other people, and then why aren't you in this group or that group? And it just went on. I'm so glad it's kind of melted away now, and we don't see that. But I'm just saying again how it's there. And if we don't guard against it, this thing will raise its head, even if people attack us. Have you ever had that happen? Sometimes people misunderstand. Sometimes they don't know all the facts, and they'll attack, and they'll just do all kinds of things to hurt us. But even if they do, should we ever attack back? No. No. Look at what it says in Matthew 5. Matthew 5 and verse 37, where it says this, "Let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more of this comes from evil. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that don't resist any evil. Don't fight back, you know. But whoever smites you on the right cheek, turn him the other. And if any man sues you at law and takes away your coat, let him have your cloak also." And so it's so important that we learn to have this spirit that Christ had, where he didn't fight back when he was attacked. He didn't do that. He didn't revile. He didn't do those kinds of things. I think one of the things that can help, because this happens at work, where there are workmates. This happens at school, where there's schoolmates. It happens in marriage, and it happens in the Church of God. But my point is, even people outside, do you understand? They are also children of God, aren't they? And why do we have a right to attack anyone that is God's? You see, what right do we have to attack others and to say things that would hurt and so on, to do things to hurt them? I say that we should, with all of our might, strive to treat everyone with the dignity that they deserve as the creation of Almighty God. The resurrection, I think this will happen. Maybe. Can't you just see it, though? The resurrection takes place, and we look over, and there's Bob. What in the world is Bob doing? How did he make it in the resurrection? I mean, after this and this and this that he did and these things that he said, how did Bob get in the resurrection? You know what Bob's thinking. How in the world did Art get in the resurrection? How did he make it, you see? The point is that we're not in competition with one another. We're not to be judging, and we must not be attacking other people. How do you think Bob is going to make it in the resurrection? Through the grace of God, just like you and I, through the mercy of our great King, we're going to make it into the kingdom of God. Not because we are superior to anybody else. Everyone has sinned, every single one of us. There isn't one righteous, no, not one. Think about this, though. What if there was someone that could make it, should make it, but didn't? And what if they were somebody who were weak and they were wounded, as so many of us are? Because I see us all as walking wounded. Who hasn't been hurt? Who hasn't suffered in this life? Every one of us, to one degree or another, we have. And then sometimes there are people who are weak. And what if someone who could have made it, we shoot at them, and because of that, they get turned off, and they don't follow through, and they give up? We've got to realize human beings are not the enemy. You know, it seems that way. And Satan works in this world, doesn't he? And he'll do things, and he'll inspire, broadcast attitudes, emotions. That's what he uses, that tool. And he wants to get us riled up. And he wants to do what? Turn people against each other. He wants to divide and conquer. And that's what he does. And that's his strategy. And that's what he uses. But we have to realize, no, even if that person is attacking us, is it the person or is it really the accuser of the brethren, you see? Who's really behind some of this stuff? The enemy is Satan, and he's subtle, and he's divisive, and he's the one we have to resist. He's the one we have to fight, and he'll use any wedge to divide, anything he can to do this in families and in the Church of God. Another thing that is our enemy is this. The lures and temptations of this world, the things that are on the internet, the pride of life, the desire to get status and be somebody, to have money, these things that pull on us. We may be attracted because we have human nature, but you understand, in truth, they are a temptation. They can be looked at as the enemy and must be resisted. Our real struggle is with human nature. This is the greatest enemy, and here it resides right in us. And our human nature wants us to be right. It wants us to be the one that's first. It wants us to be the best. It wants us to have the best piece of pie and to have the most and the nicest and biggest and greatest things. That is what it's doing inside us. Those are pulls on us. And we don't realize this because it's us. You know, we don't realize it, but that's the enemy, and that's what we've got to fight. And so this thing of friendly fire, and this is why it's so dangerous, because we point our gun at somebody else, you see, and we're not pointing it at the right target. The thing we have to kill is what? That old man. We've got to kill those pulls, those drives, those things inside us. And this is so, so much of a temptation to look at others and want to think that they are inferior or we're better or they're wrong, we're right, that kind of stuff. Let's go over to Romans. Romans says something along this line I think is valuable to bring out and reiterate, sort of remember. Romans 12, here we have this tongue. We can bless God. We can encourage others. We can do so much good with it. We can also use it to tear down. But God is in control. We have nothing to fear from anybody else. And then that's why it says this, that we're to be this way, as it says in Romans 12 and in verse 10. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another, not with slothfulness in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. So it's to be at work too, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. And then it says, bless them which persecute you. Bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. You know, it's so funny to me that in this world that is so competitive, and this man who was so jealous of this other individual becoming a deacon, you understand? That we should rejoice when anybody is successful. Why? It's Christ in them, you know? It's Christ producing the success, and I think it's so important. Rejoice when they rejoice, and weep with them when they weep, as we will with Vaughn and with Jerry and with Marilyn. Be of the same mind one towards another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. And then it says, recompense no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. And if it's possible, as much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. Don't fight. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it's written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. See, he really doesn't give us authority to attack, does he? He doesn't give us that authority. He has that authority, and he maintains it. And then he says this, therefore, if your enemy hungers, feed him. If he thirsts, give him drink, for in so doing you shall heap coals of fire on his head. And then he concludes with this profound statement, don't be overcome with evil, but instead overcome evil with good. And so it's a part of life competition out there, but we've got to realize we're in competition, all right. We've got somebody to fight. We're at war, and it's us that's the enemy. It's the pulls of the world that's the enemy. And it is Satan's incredible, crafty, deceitful influence as he broadcasts hostility and anger in a world that is filled with the red horse, a world that is at war over and over. But we fight a different war, and the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, it says. Now, there's another aspect that I think leads to this snapping, biting that takes place sometimes in life, and it's this, just simply a negative and critical attitude that people can develop. I think we live in what is probably going to be written down as the most frustrating time in all of human history. Boy, we're speeded up where so much is required of us. Have you noticed that? There's so much to do, you can hardly ever keep up with it, it seems. And then you're expected to never make mistakes, aren't you? You can work and work and work, and nobody ever says, I really appreciate what you do, and yet do one single thing wrong, and everybody's all over you. Have you ever seen that happen? This is the world we live in. And boy, I'm telling you, they've got it down to a science. You know how they planned obsolescence so you buy something and just when you think you're going to catch up now, you need a new car. And now you got more expenses. You're trying to keep your head above water and it's just so hard to do. And this is the world you and I live in. And they're trying to take your money. The government is corrupt. And then we see today the religious leaders are corrupt. This is a world that is so frustrated. And we live like this every day. And all we need is someone to punch one of our buttons, right? Boom! You know, a reaction, because we're under incredible pressures. And you can see why, I think. People that overcome in this life, can't you see why he says the first will be last? And the last will be the first? Those people living in today's age, I believe, have more pressures to sin, more temptations to sin, than any people of any time ever existing. We live in this time. And so it's just natural. I mean, it's not something that is unusual to say that we snap and bite at one another. But we've got to make sure that we don't do friendly fire. We've got to be sure that we don't let this thing drive us. Let's go to James 4. It says this, that we're not to be critical of others, not to judge them. You remember those verses and so on. And it says in James 4, another reminder, in verse 11, and speaking in verse 10, it says, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he'll lift you up. So we don't need to lift ourselves up. Speak not evil of one another, brethren, he says. He that speaks evil of his brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge. So once again, you see God's perspective on this. Who are we to begin to judge others or to condemn and that kind of thing? So it says in 1 Corinthians that love is patient, love is kind, love endures, and so on. And these are the things that are the things of eternity. And it says this, God is love. And you and I are living a life in which we are working every day to become what he is. We're wanting to become love, to be patient, kind, enduring others, and putting up with them. Now, there are cases, however, that I want to talk about where you may think that you need to correct somebody. And those cases come up, don't they? And I want to mention this a little bit, if you will, think about it, to give constructive criticism, because sarcastic, bitter kind of words, sniping, griping, complaining, whining, cynical stuff, all this just engenders this thing called friendly fire. And so it says, let's go to Philippians, Philippians 4. Staying focused on the positive, even though we live in a world that is absolutely frustrating beyond human belief almost sometimes, it can help us if we'll stay focused on the positive to the degree that we can. Philippians 4 and verse 6, be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And the peace of God which passes all understanding shall keep your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. And that's what we should do. But what do? We focus on the negative so often in life. And this is why I think meditation is so important. If we're meditating through the day and looking at life through God's eyes, we're going to be seeing, look, this is working towards the kingdom. Yeah, it's kind of wincing now, kind of hurts now. But my point is, the more we have God in our mind, and that's the purpose of meditation during the day, there's study to implant God's word, there's prayer to develop a relationship and bond with him personally and intimately, and then there's meditation throughout the day where we stay focused on him and his way. And this helps protect us from negativity in this very perverse and very sick world that we live in. So I say, by way of reminder, stay focused on our hope. Stay focused on the book. Stay in contact in prayer and meditate throughout the day. Let's go to Proverbs 17. It's another way that we fall into a trap, I feel, of friendly fire. And I think that it causes more injuries than nerve gas and some of those other kinds of things. Proverbs 17, and it's gossip. People will gossip about other people, and generally people, I think, have often thought that gossip was just saying negative things about someone and saying things that aren't true, but it's not the case. In all honesty, saying things that are gossiping are just those things that are sensational, that is, those things that appeal to human nature. It may be true or it may not be true, but the point is we are talking about others in a way to get other people excited and move them to have a certain view about other people. Anyway, it says this in Proverbs 17 and in verse 9, "He that covers a transgression seeks love. He that repeats a matter separates very friends." We're shooting at them. We're actually participating in this terrible tragedy called friendly fire. Then if you'll move over to Proverbs 26, here's another point that is made. Proverbs 26 and verse 20. "Where no wood is, the fire goes out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceases." The war stops. It goes away. It takes two to tango, in a sense. I say this in this context. There's a scripture that I believe fits this, and it's this. It says, you and I are going to be judged by every idle word. What are some of those idle words? Well, idle words are not encouragement. They're not prayer to God. What are idle words? I think some of this that we're talking about, gossip, certainly is. I mean, it's not just sitting there idling. It's doing its work. It's creating a fire. But it's those things that are not good. They're not edifying. They're not helpful. And they can be destructive. So if we're going to be judged by just those things we say that are just sort of not going anywhere, look how important it is to be careful with what we say about other people. Proverbs 15 and verse 28. "The heart of the righteous studies to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things." Man, that's me. I have poured out evil things, and I just have been shocked sometimes at my own self in life. Christ said offenses would come, and they will. But what we want to do is try to minimize. We want to build a strategy for dealing with this thing called friendly fire, like they do in the great war planning rooms. How can we minimize this? What can we do? And so on. Let's go to Proverbs 27. There's a case in particular where, has anybody ever come to you? And I remember Mr. Vild gave what I thought was a very, very interesting sermon. I wonder if you remember it. He was saying the thing that we hate most, it was correction. We hate to be corrected. Have you ever had somebody come and correct you? Sometimes it's very painful, isn't it? Sometimes it can really hurt. You know what makes a difference? How they do it. How they do it. And so I want to remind us by this. They base this. Sometimes people will go to others and they'll chew them out, correct them, and they think they can do this because of this verse here. In Proverbs 27 and verse 5 and 6, it says this, "Open rebuke is better than secret love." And yes, it is. "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful." And so there's times where a friend may seemingly wound us. They may tell us something and we go, oh, that hurts. But the question is, what do we do? And how do we do it? You understand, I've heard people say they had a right to attack somebody because they did something they didn't like. And they were doing this in love. Well, really? Then I'll tell you what, if you do something in love, there's a way it will come out. Now, Jesus Christ reproves the church, doesn't he? Every letter except Philadelphia, he corrects them, doesn't he? How does he do that? Does he just lay into the churches? Who are you? And just, I'm going to do this to him. No, he doesn't. He has a certain way he does this. And it's this. He sandwiches it. And I remember they taught me this in Ambassador College when I used to be an usher in the auditorium. And they said, if you have to go to somebody and say, please get your foot off the gold or, you know, something like that. They said, here's a way to do it. Sandwich it. That is, you go to them and you tell them something positive. Then you tell them the problem. And then you tell them something positive again. For example, we really appreciate you coming to the auditorium today. I'm so happy to have you here with us. But we wanted to remind you that our marble here is very expensive and so on. And so we have a rule not to put your foot on it. And so once again, thank you very much for coming. And we're so glad to have you with us. That's so much better than, you know, get your feet off of our marble. And so the point I make is that if we will do that with one another, whether it's in our marriages or whether it's in our church, if we have a problem with a brother, we go to them alone. And when we go to them, we don't just go chewing them out because they did something to hurt us. We go and we sandwich it and we say, we validate them. I really care about you, and it's because I care about you that I need to talk to you. There was a problem that developed, and this kind of hurt me, and I wanted to discuss it with you. You know, and I, you know, and then when you're concluded, you say, I'm so grateful that we have this friendship and that I can come to you. And that works so much better, you understand what I'm saying, to sandwich something between two positives. And that's what Christ does. He comes to the churches and he writes the letters to them and he says, I know your works and I know your faithfulness and I know you've done this, but I got this against you. And then he tells them, in by way of encouragement, go on and overcome, and you know, we're going to make it in the kingdom kind of stuff. And I think it's a really valuable point to make. There's another thing I was saying is this. When you talk to people, other people, there's what they call I messages versus you messages. Have you heard this? Heard about I messages and you messages? When you want someone to listen to what you're saying, and when there's a problem or a possible conflict, you messages are an absolute fire starter. You always do this. You're so dumb. You this, you that. How could you do this, you see? Now, the point is, that starts a fire. It starts war. And you're shooting at them. So the defense mechanism comes up, and what do you think you're going to get back? Yeah, but you, and you this, and you that. And so war begins. But an I message, instead of telling people what they are, what they've done wrong, an I message simply says what they did, how it affected me. So you can say to them, when you do this, I really am hurt. You see? When you do this, I really become discouraged. Now you're talking about you. And when you do this, sometimes people have said they're afraid to do this a little bit because it makes them feel sort of a kind of vulnerable, because I'm saying, I'm hurt, you're hurting me. And so that makes them feel vulnerable. But you know what the response in almost 99.9 of the cases of the other person? I didn't want to hurt you. I didn't want to do that. And so understanding can grow, you see, out of that kind of thing. So you can go to a brother. You can correct a brother even. And it does wound, because every time I found out what an idiot I've been, it hurts. You know, I always think I've got to be better than that. Oh, I'm not? Oh, no. But the point is, it's the way we do this, that we don't have the authority to attack ever. But I'm sure others want to know if they're hurting us, and so we should tell them. But it's the way that we go to them and the way we express these things. Ephesians 4, and let's conclude over there. I think there's probably one of the greatest keys to eliminating friendly fire is just never shoot. Just never shoot. Anybody see the movie War Games? I'm sure Randy saw it. Fascinating movie where they have this computer, and the computer is the war computer, and it's programmed with all the different strategies. And the computer is so brilliant. The computer can learn from its mistakes. So its job on this computer, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, it is playing out the different strategies for war. And what happens is it's learning from its mistakes. So it's getting so sophisticated. If these guys do this, we'll do this, we'll do that. They have all these strategies. And so what happens is this computer gets triggered for thermonuclear war. And so they don't know what to stop it. It's on its own now. It's assumed the strike has taken place, and now there is no army. I've got to take control. So the computer is now going to start thermonuclear war on the whole Earth, and the people don't know what to do. Finally, somebody comes up with an idea. It's just seconds away before it's going to fire and launch all these missiles across the United States, all around the world. Finally, they program into the computer, play tic-tac-toe, and the computer starts playing tic-tac-toe. Tic-tac-toe, tic-tac-toe, just trying to win, and it plays this out millions of times per second until it finally, everything stops. It shuts down the firing sequence. And then all of a sudden the computer types up on the screen, war is a funny game. The only way to win is not to play. Isn't that true? We don't want to play. We don't want to play that game. And so we just don't shoot. Ephesians 4, verse 29, let no corrupt communications proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby you are sealed until the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and clamor and anger and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be you kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. And so I ask you, ask Marilyn, ask God to forgive me. And I ask us to go forward and recognize that there is something called spiritual friendly fire. And let's do our best to develop a strategy to minimize this thing.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you found the message beneficial. If you would like to know more about the Eternal Church of God, we would like to hear from you. You may contact us at 1-800-723-6108. We also invite you to visit our website at eternalcog.org. Once again, thanks for listening.